Few images of the Middle Ages are as enduring as that of the Crusader knight traveling to the Holy Land. Yet the origins, nature, and consequences of the Crusades remain lively topics of debate. What motivated people of every status, from kings and nobles to peasants and hermits, to take place in the Crusades? What was it like to go on a crusade and to live in a Crusader society? Why and how did Europe suddenly intrude so forcefully in the affairs of the two established powerhouses of the Mediterranean, the Byzantine Empire and the House of Islam? From Spain to the Baltics, the successes, failures, and unintended consequences of the Crusading movement played a crucial role in determining the future shape and identity of Europe. You're listening to my podcast, What Were the Crusades and Why Does It Matter? And I've opened with a quotation from a history professor at the College of William and Mary in his presentations, How the Crusades Changed History. You may not know a lot about history. Maybe you're at the other end of the spectrum. You read history books all the time. I hope that this podcast will be helpful to you wherever you fall. I'd like to begin by explaining or defining what a crusade is, and then we'll talk about what kinds of things may have motivated the crusaders, and then we're going to analyze the crusades biblically, and I'll go even a little bit farther than that as we look at our own hearts. Assuming nothing about your knowledge of history, let me just give a very brief, and this will be very simplified, historical overview. Of course, Christians don't have territory because there's no such thing as a Christian government in the first three centuries of the faith. This changes in the early 4th century. So from the 300s to the 600s, most of the Holy Land, it's part of the Roman Empire. I know you may have been told in school that the Roman Empire fell in 476 AD. Well, that's Rome in Italy. That's the Western Roman Empire. The Roman Empire continued on for another 1,000 years in what was called the Eastern Roman Empire or the Byzantine Empire. So from the 300s to the 600s, the Holy Land is part of that empire, the Roman Empire. But in the 600s, this territory becomes part of Islam, to use the political word, the caliphate. From the 1000s to the 1100s, Christian warriors and peasants from all strata of society participating strove to take back the land. And so in those first few crusades, they established crusader states with governments and multiple fortifications, but they ultimately were not able to hold on to them. By the 1200s, Christians had given up, for the most part, the dream of reconquering the Holy Land. Instead, they targeted their crusading energy on fellow Christians and other perceived enemies. So I hope that's helpful, just a little bit of background. So from the 300s to 600s, the Holy Land is Christian in territory. 600s, it's Muslim, and it remains so for 4.5 centuries. And then we have the Crusades, and those Crusades take part from the late 1000s up into the 1200s and beyond. I hope that's helpful to you. So a crusade is a massive military attempt to recapture Christian territory. And I put the word Christian in scare quotes because Christians don't actually have territory. And especially in the Holy Land and taking this land from the Muslims. That's what a crusade is. It's a kind of a hybrid of a pilgrimage and a holy war. Now, a pilgrimage, going to see a place or an object of significance in our faith, was not part of the early Christian theology. We don't see pilgrimages until really the beginning of the Middle Ages. And pilgrims weren't supposed to travel armed anyway. It was a peaceful thing. And then you have the holy war. In the Old Testament, there are a few occasions where God's people are given instructions for holy war. So this is a combination of Old Testament holy war and this 4th or 5th century phenomenon of pilgrimage. And you would not believe how many people took part in the Crusades. Just in the major Crusades, easily 100,000 Europeans took part in these efforts. Societies were drastically changed, drained of leadership, sometimes for years, as the people who had the means went off with their servants and their companions across the Mediterranean world to the Holy Land. Oh, and the word itself, crusade, comes from a Latin word, crux, C-R-U-X. Crux means cross. So you may have heard the word crusade in connection with a program your church was hosting. More on that in a little bit. So that's what a crusade is. Now, how many crusades were there? Lots and lots and lots. Now, there are four major crusades, but they continue to take place even after the 13th century. The first one, it gets organized in the year 1095, though it doesn't really take off for a few more years. The first one is called by the Pope. He makes an incredible claim, which we'll talk about in a moment, and that ends in 1099. The second crusade, 1147 to 1149. So here we are in the mid-12th century. At this time, the crusaders thought, we're just going to keep losing. We need to consolidate our gains. And so they created crusader states. In a few days, I'll be flying back to Israel. Israel, like many of the countries in the area, has the ruins, the archaeological ruins of various forts, crusader forts, all over the place. And so these crusaders, a lot of them came from France. And so the Europeans were called Franks, whether they were actually French or not. I mean, you could be a German, but everyone was a Frank. So these Frankish fortifications are what remains of them all over the Middle East. So the Crusader states are set up, and that's in the 1100s. Then you have the Third Crusade. This is at the end of the 1100s, 1189 to 1192. Maybe you saw a movie called The Kingdom of Heaven. If not, it is worth watching on Netflix or however you watch films. The Kingdom of God, starring Orlando Bloom, Jeremy Irons, a number of other great actors. There's a son, a father and a son reconciliation theme that's very powerful. But Orlando Bloom, who's great with swords, as we may recall from certain movies like Pirates of the Caribbean, he ends up going on a crusade. And it's the Third Crusade, and Saladin, the Muslim, is portrayed in a very honorable way, and the Christian king and a lot of the Christian soldiers are portrayed in a less honorable way. And there's a lot of truth to that. You'd expect that of the media. I don't think there actually were bad guys or good guys. None of this is really particularly Christian. But Kingdom of Heaven is set in that stage. And so if you want to get a kind of a feel for it, or at least a feel for what the media and many academics think, go watch that film. And then the Fourth Crusade, the Final Crusade, begins in 1198. Now, at this point, the Crusader states have failed. The Third Crusade ultimately didn't really establish an awful lot. And so they come back, the Europeans come back, and they decide to go to Constantinople. Well, that's it. That's in, where Asia meets Europe, modern Turkey. That's not even that close to Jerusalem. Well, the fact is they weren't trying to get the Holy Land. There, they actually targeted the Orthodox Christians, those who belong to the Eastern Roman Empire. So from an outside view, this is Christians killing Christians. I mean, just terrible stuff. Now, there were subsequent crusades, I think, in every century up until the 17th century, and people called for crusades all over the place. They took place in Northern Europe, in Spain. You know, there's a crusade to get rid of the heretics and Jews and Muslims and everything. The last crusade was Venice, the little kingdom of Venice against the Ottoman Turks, and that actually ended in 1699. Okay, I know it's a lot of dates. It's all in the notes that come with the podcast. Well, what motivated these crusaders? Plunder? Well, I mean, I think a lot of them went into debt and never recovered. It was incredibly expensive to take part in a crusade. Imagine having to come up with $100,000 or $500,000 to take you and your friends and your horses and your all the food you'll need for the next 3 years. Very, very expensive. So what the motivations must have been strong. Glory? Maybe there's restlessness, those who have the means, what you call Wanderlust, they just want to get around and it's like a travel bug. What was it? They wanted to leave their mark on history. I think one of the most powerful motivations was to become clean in the sight of God. Now, you may wonder, how would drenching your clothes in the blood of the infidel make you feel close to God? Well, this gets back to the proclamation of the Pope. Because the Pope proclaimed This is at the beginning of the First Crusade. Anyone who takes part in this crusade, all of his sins will be taken care of in purgatory. Well, you have to remember that this is the era, this is the High Middle Ages. Christians had believed now for a number of centuries that when you die, you spend time in purgatory, and there your sins, your selfishness is burned off so that you can have a pure love for God. How long would you be in purgatory? No one seems to have known, whether that's hundreds, thousands, or millions of years. The indulgences were sold, and this was the thing that sparked the Protestant Reformation. You could purchase an indulgence or obtain one by traveling in pilgrimage or looking at a certain relic or contributing to a certain fund. But this document that you were given was a guarantee that you would be exempt from, say, 100 years of purgatory. Well, you know, if you're going to be in the flames of purgatory for eons and eons, 100 years may not be that much of a difference. But listen to this. The Pope said, you will receive a plenary indulgence. Plenary meaning full, complete, all sins. You'll need to spend zero time in purgatory. Let's not underestimate the factor of fear, the tremendous relief people would have, feeling that they could be clean in the presence of God, even though the method is not right. So the plenary indulgence. And it's kind of an interesting thing even to wonder, what would have happened if the Pope hadn't done that? Would indulgences have become the huge issue that led Martin Luther, just 400 years later, to begin the Protestant Reformation? I mean, the landscape of Christian history may have turned out very differently. So that's the motivation. Now it's time to get into the analysis before we can conclude. Well, first, as I've said or implied, the Crusades were a radical departure from basic Christian values. I mean, it's an uncritical use of Scripture, just a verse here from the Old Testament, one from the New Testament, combining Old Testament holy war with the gospel. That's not right. But it's this odd hybrid. You wonder, what was there any precedent for this? Well, the Byzantines, the Eastern Romans, had retaken, they had to conquer a southern and central Italy in the 6th century, and that was a kind of a holy war. So there's kind of an example there. Well, how do Christians even get to the business of attacking their enemies, especially since the first 3 centuries, Christianity was uniformly pacifist? Well, Augustine, this is after the empire has made peace with the church, or is it the church making peace with the empire? Augustine came up with just war theory, and another theologian as well. But Augustine writes this around the year 400 AD, and there's certain strict conditions under which warfare can be okay, where you don't actually have to feed your enemy or pray for him or bless him or give him what he asks. You have to actually kill him. So let's say the foundation stones had been laid many centuries earlier. What kind of attitude did the Crusaders have? And not necessarily the Crusaders, because these were people from every station of life. How about the thinkers, those who should have known the Bible, those to whom people would have looked for approval? Well, this may be amazing to think, but I think we all know that in the Middle Ages, there was a time where the caliphate was more advanced than most of Europe. So this Islamic supremacy lasted for a while, and then it went really in the opposite direction. But before the 13th century, Crusaders really couldn't believe, you know, why would Muslims want to become like us? Because they're so advanced compared to us, culturally, economically. You know, it's like let's say you meet in a smelly building that you rent, and there are roaches walking across the stage during church, and you're trying to invite someone who attends a church made out of diamonds that's crystal clear, and you know what, you'd be embarrassed. We don't want to have those people over. I think that probably made it easier to justify warfare over persuasion. They basically given up trying to convert the Muslims. According to that same professor of history at William and Mary, and this is referring to the Catholic intellectuals, the monks of two of the orders, he says, the Franciscans and Dominicans saw no contradiction or opposition between crusade and mission. Now, for us, let's admit, in the 21st century, very hard for us not to see a difference. Yes, I'm in my personal ministry, I'm reaching out to this person and that person. Oh, yeah, and that guy, he opposed me, so I killed him. What did you do this week? I mean, for us, we would say, well, you can't kill people. You can't do that. But it was a different society. It was a different world. And remember, they had had centuries of indoctrination in a gospel that had been quite a bit twisted. King Louis IX of France spoke about self-defense. He said that Christians should not attempt to defend the faith, except with his sword, and I'm quoting him, except with his sword, and that he should thrust it into the scoundrel's belly as far as it will enter. Okay. Theologian Peter Comestor, French theologian who died in the late 1100s. He was asked by the Patriarch of Jerusalem, that's like an archbishop, I guess, he was asked whether crusading was really permissible in light of biblical teaching. I mean, didn't Jesus say, love your enemy? Well, in response, Peter told the Patriarch, and this is the quote, to act in a manly way, be composed, and shed the blood of Christ's enemies. So, attitudes, at least among churchmen and political leaders, were surprisingly positive. And I don't want the podcast to be too long, so let's move on a little bit further. What about the example of Christ? We've alluded to this already. Jesus didn't teach or exemplify violence towards those who rejected his message, right? But in contrast, Muhammad both preached and engaged in violence. I mean, you were tolerant. That you were tolerated if you paid the tribute money, the jizah. And Muslims will often say, you know, there's no compulsion in religion. Surah 2, 256, part of the Quran. But it's not really true, because if you didn't pay the money, then, you know, it's jihad and you're in trouble. So Muhammad preached violence. He engaged in violence. Jesus preached against violence. And even though he was innocent and he would have been justified, he refused to have any part of it. Amazing, huh? Well, is it possible that the ends would have justified the means? I mean, what if they had got back the Holy Land and they'd kept it, and as a result, lots of people have become Christians? Well, you know, my friends, that's not what happened. The Crusaders claimed to be doing God's will. So why, after the 13th century, did the Crusaders fail to hold on to Jerusalem and other parts of the Holy Land? The Crusades were ultimately unsuccessful. They were a colossal failure. They were not blessed by God. That's my analysis. Conclusion. Four challenges for you and for me. First, let's be informed. Let's make it our goal to become generally familiar with key developments in Christian history. We don't all need to get history degrees or read mountains of books, but just to know the basics is very useful for our conviction and our outreach. Let's be informed. Remember that there are four major crusades from the 11th to 13th century, and then there are others after. But if you just remembered that part, that would be good. Second, let's be sensitive. Be careful about language. The word crusade is unpleasant and even scary for some people, especially Jews and Muslims. They associate the word crusade with pogroms, with warfare, with oppression. And let's try to understand the bitter root that's taken hold among many Muslims, many Muslim lands. The violent response on the part of some of them may not be justified, but it isn't irrational. It makes sense looking back through the centuries of so-called Christian history. Let's be informed. Let's be sensitive. Thirdly, let's be humble. We need to own the evil of the church. It's easy to say, well, that wasn't the true church, or, yeah, I wouldn't have done that. Well, the way that comes across is not good. I think people will realize, if we're humble, they realize that, yeah, probably we would not have gone along with it. But false believers, true believers, all of us have feet of clay. No great man or woman of God is without fault, and often mortal flaws. The history of the church is littered with sad occasions and things that are shameful. Most frequently, the objections of what about the Inquisition or what about the Crusades come up. Let's be humble about that. Don't be too quick to dismiss it and say, well, those were false Christians. Let's not act holier than thou. You remember Jesus was talking to the Pharisees and others in Matthew 23, near the end of Matthew 23. You see, that generation considered themselves righteous, and they thought that if they lived in the past, they would have done the honorable thing. And right now, they're doing the honorable thing of decorating the tombs of the prophets whom their fathers or grandfathers or forefathers had persecuted. So Jesus points out, yeah, you say, if we lived back then, yeah, no, we wouldn't have killed Isaiah and Jeremiah. We wouldn't have done that. But he says, actually, there's no difference. You know, one generation kills them, the other generation decorates the graves. No one really gets it. Jesus calls us to be realistic and to be humble in that way. We do not know for sure. I don't know for sure what I would have done or condoned. Let's say I was living in Spain during the Inquisition, the biggest years of the Spanish Inquisition, say the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s. Would I have spoken up? I hope so. Would I have gone along with it? I hope not. But I'm not there. I mean, if I were there, I would be a different person. And so, you know, I hardly even know myself. How would I know of that person? What about the situation in Nazi Germany? There were quite a few clergymen who spoke up. There are a lot of Germans who went along with Hitler, but a sizable minority who were shocked, appalled, and resisted, and many of them died, of course, or were in prison. We don't really know what we would have done unless we actually lived there. Then you know what you did. So when it comes to the Crusades, that is, in the century or two around the year 1000, would we have taken part? Would we have approved? Would we have given some money to our friend? Because it's so expensive, at least we can help him to go, and then we don't have to die and leave a widow. What would we actually have done? We tend to fantasize, and I think to paint ourselves as more righteous than we really are. And a big part of being humble is having some historical perspective. I know it took me a long time to say that, but this is really important stuff, friends. Let's be informed, let's be sensitive, let's be humble, and let's be convicted. Because even though we need to be humble, we need to take a stand where Jesus takes a stand. And that issue of treatment of one's enemies was emphasized so strongly by the Lord. I mean, look at the end of Matthew 5. That's a place we need to take a stand. When the church on the whole embraced the way of violence beginning in that fourth century, they were actually abandoning the call of Christ. The Crusades are a disgraceful blotch on the history and the memory of the Church of Christ. So, hopefully now you know what the Crusades were and when they took place, some of the motivations for participation, the analysis, historical and even biblical, and you'll be in a better position to respond next time someone makes the excuse or the objection, well, I wouldn't want to go along with those hypocrites of Christians. After all, what about the Crusades? Thanks for listening to the podcast.